Next topic is Agenda Paper 15, the selection of the applicable tax rate for measurement of deferred tax relating to investments in associate. The Interpretations Committee received a request to clarify the selection of the applicable tax rate for the measurement of deferred tax on an investment in an associate in a multi-tax rate jurisdiction. The submitter has asked how the tax rate should be selected when local tax legislation prescribes different tax rates for different manners of recovery, for example, dividends or sale or liquidation. We noted that the paragraph 51A of IAS 12 states that an entity measures deferred tax liabilities and deferred tax assets using the tax rate that is consistent with the expected manner of recovery or settlement. And if one part of the capitalized profit is expected to be received as a dividend, and another part is expected to be recovered upon sale or liquidation, for example, an investor has a clear plan to sell the investment 3 years later and expects to receive dividends until the sale of the investment, then, in order to be consistent with the expected manner of recovery, we consider that different tax rates would be applied to the parts of the capitalized profit. From the outreach, we heard slightly different responses. Many respondents stated that tax rate for dividend is used unless there is a plan to sell or liquidate the investments. Some respondents stated that tax rate for sale or liquidation is used unless there is evidence that the investee will pay dividends. And also others stated that there would be a bifurcation of the portion expected to be recovered by dividends and sale or liquidation. We consider that these responses reflect a different fact pattern and instead of diversity in practice. So that is why we think that the principle of using the tax rate that is consistent with the expected manner of recovery or settlement is clear. Consequently, the staff recommendation is not to add the issue to its agenda. And the question to the Interpretations Committee is whether the Interpretations Committee agree that it should not take this issue onto the agenda, and if so, we appreciate any suggestion on the wording on the tentative agenda decision. Thank you.
Comments? John?
Then Reinhardt?
I mean, I agree with the staff recommendation. The only thing is, I think the reference to the term capitalized profit in the agenda decision is sort of, I will change, because actually the requirement is to recognize deferred tax on temporary differences. They might be greater or less than the capitalized profit in the associate, so I wouldn't use that term.
Temporary difference instead. Thank you.
Reinhardt?
I'm going to say exactly the same thing, because I know there is a view out there that one should capitalize, or sorry, componentize the different parts of the temporary difference and apply potentially different tax rates to each component, as opposed to looking at the temporary difference as a whole and based on the expected manner of settlement or recovery of that. And so, as John said, I would suggest changing capitalized profit to temporary difference throughout.
Tony?
Say again. I'm just going to make the same point, focus on the temporary difference and apply the guidance in IS 12. So completely happy with where the staff's got to with just those words changed.
Laurence?
Not disagreeing, but I would just highlight that it is difficult to exercise the judgment about how do you expect that this temporary difference will reverse, because you don't have the control over the dividends. So how are you going to demonstrate expectations of dividends and not getting it, say, on liquidation and so on? Well, I don't think this is going to change what you are writing, but I would. There are some wording where, for instance, at the end of the first paragraph, you say one part of the capitalized profits will be received as dividends during the holding period. How do you know that?
Yeah, What I expected is based on the past experiences, like with the
past experiences, when the entity has no dividends, has no past experience of distributing dividends. Well, it's a practical problem. Companies overcome it, but we should not put too much. I would suggest they apply judgment, not get into too much details about that. The other thing that there is a related issue, if you have a temporary difference on initial recognition, what do you do usually? Do you book an expense, a taxable difference, or what do you do? Because the initial recognition exemption does not apply or would not apply. So not sure that.
Why would it not apply?
Because it's not in the section of.
Still a temporary difference on the initial recognition of an asset.
It depends how you read, but. Okay, I'm bringing an additional issue.
That's a rhetorical
question. It is not
question.
The one, but.
Sandy, anything to add?
Not on this one.
I have a question for the committee. Back earlier today, if we can cast our minds back then, we were very hesitant to characterize or dismiss something that looked like diversity in practice because we thought it might arise from different fact situations, different environments, whatever. In this agenda decision, the staff has reached the conclusion that what appears to be diversity is in fact different fact situations. If that is true, if the staff has reached the correct decision, do we need to make any reference to diversity of practice at all? Or do we just say, delete the initial sentence of the last paragraph and leave the second one? Consequently, we decided not to do it. John?
Well, I'll answer that question. I was going to make a comment, another comment, but I think we're saying that we, to some extent, we're saying IAS 12 is sufficient guidance to determine it. I don't think we're referencing or need to reference any diversity in practice, so I would agree.
We just take that out.
I would remove the movement. Just on the other point I was going to make, to agree with what Laurent said, paragraph 15, the initial recognition exception does exclude taxable temporary differences associated with investments in associates, branches, and joint ventures, so they are required to be recognized on initial recognition.
Bruce.
Can I just make comments on that? To me, the one is speaking to the other. So what we're saying is look, IAS 12 is clear, and to support that, we're saying we've actually identified no diversity. So to me, I think that the one is supporting the other. I don't think that we're saying we're not taking it on because IAS 12 is clear and there's no diversity. I think we're saying IAS 12 is clear, supported by the fact that there's no diversity. So I would leave it.
Well, my reservation, Bruce, is that over time, I have observed us either inconsistent or promiscuous, I'm not sure which.
You've observed that over time.
In referring to no diversity in practice. And I was trying to see if this was a test case for saying we don't need the reference to no diversity in practice. We've reached a conclusion, and at a minimum, the reference to no diversity in practice is speculation about which we are incapable.
Except I think that they're two different. They're two different arguments, and I'll tell you why. I think the one by saying that the committee has noted that we believe that IAS 12 is sufficient is saying that the people sitting around the room have taken a decision that the limited number of people sitting around this room have decided that we think IAS 12 is sufficient. The second one is saying that in addition to that, when we performed outreach, we've also identified that out there nobody else has given us evidence that this is not clear. So I actually think it's two different things.
Well, I don't want to argue this too long, In fact, people did tell us there was diversity. We reached the conclusion, we being Kachiro, with Michael's assistance, that what appeared to be diversity was in fact different facts and circumstances.
Yeah, but now you're arguing a different thing.
Well, that what I'm saying is, does the work that we did in this circumstance support a conclusion about no diversity, given the difficulty that we had with making that observation in other cases today? A. And B, in any event, is it necessary? And so those are my two points. But, John?
I would agree. I don't think we have a basis for making that statement. I think that's our assessment of what we've heard. But the people who provided comment to us did indicate diversity. We've assessed that that's not real diversity in accounting. That's diversity in facts and circumstances. But I don't know that we have sufficient evidence to form that conclusion in as a committee.
Tony?
Much the same place. I think that the basis for, certainly the basis for my conclusion, was that there is enough in IAS 12 to tell you what you ought to be doing, and that there will be circumstances where it's reasonably clear which rate to use. There'll be circumstances where that judgment is more difficult. And in those circumstances, if it's material, you make a disclosure. But people may well come to different conclusions. So I don't think there's a basis to say that there isn't any diversity. I just think that IAS 12 gives you enough to determine the judgment that management needs to make. And so I base it on that.
Andrew, and then Alan, and then Bruce wants to come back.
Yeah, I'd also prefer to remove the reference to lack of diversity. I have no doubt that Kachiro and Michael done a very robust analysis to say they're different fact patterns, but without seeing that analysis, I wouldn't be 100% comfortable with that statement.
You know, one point I want to say is many people implied the issuers are following the principle that is reflecting the expected manner of recovery. In addition to that, they specifically say the tax rate for dividend is used, or tax rate for liquidation is used. So what I assumed is, as long as they are saying that they are following the expected amount of recovery, so I think the expected amount of recovery is different in like, different.
And I wasn't attacking you. I was putting you in the unfortunate situation of a test case or lab rat. Alan?
I was just going to say, I would avoid saying diversity in practice. I'd say that didn't have any evidence of diversity in the application of IAS 12, which is quite a different thing. I'm not saying you say that in the circumstance, but the problem that Wayne's alluding to is when you say practice, that brings in both the actual facts and circumstances and the application of the standard. I think, and it's whether or not you're comfortable enough saying there's no evidence of diversity in the application of 12, that's a different issue, but practice is just too wide to me. It's both.
Okay, Bruce, you get last chance, and then I go to the phone for one last try.
It's just my one last comment, and sorry, I think maybe I'm picking on it because I do have the same concern as you that sometimes we're very inconsistent in the way we do this. I'm saying if in this situation we agree that there's no diversity, absolutely, we take it out, no doubt. What I am saying is I think that where we do have situations where there's no diversity, I think that we should be putting those in. And I prefer Alan's wording by a long way because I think it is important to say that we've got those externally.
Okay. Sandy, any final comments?
No.
Okay, we have two choices regarding that sentence. Plan A is to take it out. Plan B is to articulate it, as Alan said, which would be no diversity in the application of IAS 12. Those in favor of Plan A? Four. Sandy, which do you prefer?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
The choice is between taking it out, the final sentence of the agenda decision, or re-articulating it along the lines that Alan suggested. That the committee observe no diversity in the application of IAS 12.
I would take it out.
Okay, Sandy would be a take it out, which unfortunately doesn't matter because there aren't enough people who support that. I assume all of the rest of you would vote for the rearticulation, which means it carries. So we will rearticulate it as Alan suggested, and you'll see it in Outlook. Okay?